Hello and welcome to Fog in the Channel, the podcast on Brexit as seen from the continent. My name is Stefan de Vries. I'm a European journalist, usually based in Paris, but this week I'm in London. I just arrived at St. Pancras Station, and the last time I was here was about 100 days ago, and today there are exactly 100 days left till Brexit. So I decided to jump on the Eurostar to check the mood in London. In this episode, I'll meet Simon Smits. He's the Dutch ambassador to the UK, and the Netherlands is one of Britain's oldest and closest partners. And I'll ask him how Brexit is going to affect the Dutch. And then there's some music in Brexit. Who would have thought? The Reunion Boys is a new European band begging Britain to come back. And I'll be talking to their creator, Julia Feldman, in Amsterdam. And I'm also going to have a cup of tea with Mark Roche. He's a Belgian-born journalist who was a Remainer before the referendum, but he has now changed his mind and his nationality, and he's a Brit and a Brexiteer. And I will visit him in his cozy house in Notting Hill.
We cannot aim at anything less than the union of Europe as a whole, and we look forward with confidence to the day when that union will be achieved.
Mind the gap.
I'm walking in Hyde Park. It's a lovely day here in London, clear blue sky, and I'm going to the Royal Dutch Embassy. Not because I'm Dutch, but because the Netherlands is one of the most important trading partners of the UK in the European Union. There are also a lot of Anglo-Dutch companies, for instance, Unilever or Shell. And I would like to know, what is the impact of Brexit on the Netherlands, on its economy, but also on its trade relations with the UK? And of course, also, what are the opportunities? And for that reason, I'm having a meeting now with the ambassador, Simon Smits. Hello, Mr. Smits. Thank you for receiving me here. You're the ambassador of probably one of the oldest, one of the closest allies of the UK, not only geographically, but also historically, economically, and maybe even mentally. The relations between the Netherlands and the UK have always been excellent, or at least they have been since the end of the 17th century. You arrived here in 2015, and it was very quiet then, I assume. Then suddenly, in the night of June 23rd, 2016, when the result of the referendum became clear, all changed. How was that?
Well, I went to bed around about 2 o'clock, I think. And I thought what people had told me, well, it will probably be a pro-EU, a Remain vote. And lo and behold, I woke up, I think, 6:30 in the morning, and then the final results came in, and of course it had turned the other way. Yeah, so that was a bit of a surprise.
That's a diplomatic understatement, I assume.
Well, I think we made no secret in the Netherlands that obviously we were very sad to see the UK wanting to leave the EU, because we're, as you said, we're close, we're like-minded partners, trade partners, but also if you look at, for instance, rule of law, we see eye to eye on a lot of things. And at the same time, obviously, we have to respect that decision. It's a democratic decision. So if that's the way the UK wants to go, then there's nothing else that we can do but respect that.
Yeah. Now, the Netherlands is one of the most important trade partners of the UK.
Yeah. And investors.
And investors, yeah, as well. Mm-hmm. How are you going to, how are you dealing with, it's hard to say preparations, because you can prepare for many things, but things are going not really, you know.
Well, exactly. Preparations, I think planning is probably the best action one can take against uncertainty. And there is, of course, lingering uncertainty, because nobody knows what the near future will bring and how the vote will go. and what the various options are. There's a lot of speculation, but I don't think it makes much sense to just keep on speculating. It's better to prepare for any outcome. And that is exactly, of course, what we are doing.
Yeah, did it change your work as an ambassador since the referendum 2 years ago?
Well, I think without exaggeration, you can say that a lot of the work is now Brexit related. And this goes for our contacts, obviously, with politicians, parliamentarians, but also business people here. Also Dutch citizens. We have about 150,000 Dutch passport holders in the UK, and many of them are worried about their status, whether they can bring their mother over from the Netherlands, or whether they can take their British partners back to the Netherlands with them. What about children? Some of them have British passports, some of them have Dutch passports. Even within families, there's different passports. So what we do is inform them. We have information evenings all over the country. They are live streamed. We, of course, are following developments very closely. And that, of course, is all Brexit related. Yes.
Yeah. Are the Dutch citizens living here worried, or how do they react?
Yes, they are. There's an organization called the 3 Million. They represent the 3 million EU passport holders in this country. And a number of them, of course, are Dutch. So I regularly meet with a number of Dutch ladies who are also in contact with the Dutch parliament, with Dutch politicians, of course, also here with British politicians. They go to Brussels because they want answers to their questions. And of course, until we have an agreement, there is no absolute certainty on what will happen with citizens' rights. Yeah. And the same, of course, goes for British citizens in the EU and in the Netherlands.
Yeah. How many British citizens are there in the Netherlands? Have you had an idea?
I think it's around about 50 to 60,000. I don't know the exact number. And here, I must say, our estimate is 150,000, but there's, of course, no obligation to register here. There's no central registration of citizens here in the UK. So but we extrapolate from, for instance, the number of passports that we hand out over a year.
Yeah, I saw that this week you presided a ceremony of British people becoming Dutch.
Naturalization ceremony, yes, yeah. That's correct, yes.
Are there more and more Brits than before who apply for a Dutch passport?
Yes, we see a rise in those numbers. And you're right, we had about 40 Brits opting for Dutch nationality, for instance, because they have Dutch family relations, a Dutch mother, and so they can opt for Dutch nationality without losing their British citizenship, and they can obtain a Dutch passport. And when I speak to them, many see it as a kind of you could say insurance policy.
Yeah. Now, what would be the economic impact on the Netherlands being one of the most important trading partners of the UK?
Well, that depends very much on the outcome, so it's very hard to predict. There was a recent report in the Netherlands that we stand to lose, I think, over the coming years, 2.3 billion euros in case of a no-deal scenario. It's all scenario planning, of course. One former finance minister, Jeroen Dijsselbloem, has said this is only a lose-lose option, so nobody will get the better for it. But again, it very much depends on what deal we will end up with in the end.
Now, there are also, I assume, opportunities with Brexit. Is there an upside, according to you?
Well, many people said to me when the Netherlands got the European Medicines Agency, they said, well, you must profit from this enormously with these 800 or 900 highly qualified people and the spin-off, etc. And my honest answer is, well, it's a thin silver lining on an otherwise dark cloud. And this should in no way feel like a victory or whatever. We are worried, of course, about any adverse consequences, and that's why we are planning, for instance, in customs. We are hiring extra customs officials. We are informing Dutch companies. We have special arrangements now that companies can get advice on their supply chain with Brexit vouchers, etc. We've opened websites. So we're doing everything in our power to at least prepare Dutch citizens and also Dutch businesses for what is to come.
Yeah. Now, one of the consequences of the UK leaving the European Union is the fact that the Dutch diplomatic service will be enlarged, and especially in Europe. Is that a direct consequence of the UK leaving Brexit? Or what's going to happen exactly?
Well, if I talk for my team here in the embassy, yes, we will see more people coming in. For instance, customs. We had already people in cooperating very closely with the British police forces and the National Crime Agency, for instance. We have also had extra people for the Netherlands Foreign Investment Agency, because if there are companies in the UK who are thinking of setting up, for instance, a subsidiary abroad or on the continent, it's obvious that we would like them to settle in the Netherlands if they have a choice.
Yeah, of course. But in Brussels, do you think the dynamics at the table of the 27 will change when the UK is no longer there? And then particularly regarding the Dutch position?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question to answer because they're now still a member, of course, and nobody can predict exactly what the dynamics will be. So yes, it might be that we will have to forge other or new alliances, but it's not that we're, you know, one against many. I think there's many like-minded, luckily many like-minded states within the European Union that see eye to eye on a number of the issues that I just mentioned. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, yeah. Now, on a more personal note, you're also a Londoner since 4 years.
Yeah, right.
You're overlooking the beautiful Hyde Park. You're an avid runner, I've understood.
Well, I'm avid, but but not a very good one. I don't run as often I do my running, and we recently set up a running club so that we run during the lunch hour or some lunch hours with a number of colleagues from the embassy.
Yeah, and what's your opinion as a Londoner, as a citizen living in this beautiful capital on Brexit? Has the city changed? What do you like? What do you love?
I love and will keep on loving London, obviously. What I do see, of course, is over the past years that a lot of the political time and energy and discussion here has been devoted to Brexit. What I also see is, of course, that it's a very divisive issue in Parliament, within parties, between generations, in families, and that, of course, whatever happens after the 29th of March, that, you know, the country will have to come to terms with this division, and sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and you started as an English teacher once in a very,
that's right,
very
yeah,
long time.
Yeah.
So the love for the English language and the Brits goes way back. Don't you feel, just like me, I'm a big Anglophile, don't you feel a little bit maybe betrayed in your love for these
no,
islands?
No, I wouldn't say betrayed. And as I
disappointed?
Said, no, well, yes, maybe a bit. But I mean, what I personally feel is pretty irrelevant. What I think is more important is to look to the future. And for me as an ambassador here, what I see, of course, in the near future, it's highly likely that the more or less automatic contacts via Brussels will disappear. You know, the councils, the high-level working groups, the committees, etc. And I worked in Brussels for 5 years myself. That will go. That will disappear. And it's our task and my task to fill that vacuum on a bilateral basis and to make sure that we keep all those links and strengthen them. And that's also partly why, of course, we get an extension of the staff in this embassy, because it will be more and harder work for us to get those contacts going or to keep them going.
Yeah. And for the time being, you will stay in this beautiful city.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Okay. Thank you very much, Simon Smith.
You're most welcome.
Gran Bretaña, vuelve. believe this is the end. Oh no.
I cannot believe this is the end. Well, me neither. You're hearing the song Britain Come Back from the Reunion Boys, a new boys band who released their single this week. And they are very sad that Britain is leaving the European Union. The Reunion Boys are the brainchild of Julia Feldman. She's an artist from Amsterdam and she's joining us now. Hello, Julia. Yes, you are the creative mastermind behind the Reunion Boys. Tell us, who are these handsome fellows?
Those boys are five Europeans with a burning heart for Europe that want to get the UK back.
And this band is your declaration of love to the UK.
Exactly, yeah. This is my answer to Brexit. When the referendum happened, I was living in New York at the time, and I was very homesick, and I was not longing for cheese and licorice like most Dutch people might do, but for the concept of Europe, and as I see it, that's a place where there's real history and real culture and real efforts to make the lives of all citizens better. And so the Brits voted to leave us, and this was a bit of a bubble pop moment for me. It was the first time I realized that not everybody was as convinced of this, the European project, as I was. So it was a slap in the face, and I felt dumped, and it was really a heartbreak. And it also gave me a profound sense of powerlessness because, well, it quickly turned out that a lot of people had worked really hard to break down the image of Europe during this referendum period. And they were like, it was like they were breaking down my home and I was there standing empty-handed and not being able to do anything at all. And well, this intense emotion, the last time I felt that way was when Take That broke up.
Oh yeah, that was indeed a very sad moment in the history of pop music.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and this breakup quickly became sort of symbolic for me for what was happening in Europe with Brexit. And not only because the emotion was so similar, but also because the members of Take That and a lot of the most famous British boy bands like the Beatles come from Leave Country. Yeah, Robbie Williams was born in Stoke-on-Trent and they voted overwhelmingly to leave us. So I thought, what better than use the same language to ask them to please reconsider and give us a second chance and come back.
Yes, you're right. So you then decided to turn your sadness into something positive.
Yes.
And how did you manage to start a band? How did it work?
Yeah. Well, it took me a long time to find them because this idea has been in the making for a while. The referendum is a while back now. I can't believe it's still not resolved. But okay, like over a year ago, I started looking for the boys and I wrote out auditions and I got some responses to that and I asked everybody I knew. But it was hard because I needed to find boys that were talented and beautiful, of course, but also really felt like they had a stake in the European Union because it is about the message. I chose them to represent European citizens and reasons for European citizens to want to be part of the EU. So that was like my main objective. And I think I succeeded.
Well, yes, you have a boys band. That's already something.
Yeah.
So you choose Europeans for the band.
Yeah. Pablo is from Spain, but he works in Amsterdam as well. Logistically, it was for me most useful if they were living around me because I don't have any funding, so I cannot fly the people in, of course. This is all coming from myself. So I ended up with a very diverse group of five boys. Some of them are studying medicine. Pablo is from Spain. Syed is actually from Afghanistan. He fled Afghanistan when he was five and arrived in the Netherlands. And I think his story is very exemplary of what the European Union can be for people because he fled a war-torn area and found literally peace and prosperity in the Netherlands, and now he's studying to become a surgeon. And to him, the European Union is really the thing that gave him a second chance.
You paid for it by yourself?
Yeah.
And how did you finance
yes.
it?
Well, in two ways. I got a small fund from the Amsterdam Fonds for the Kunst.
Yeah, that's the Amsterdam City Art Fund, yeah. right?
So that's a local fund. But all the rest I funded myself. I am an animator, so I draw poppetjes, I would say in Dutch.
Characters.
Characters, yeah. I make hand-drawn animation, so I put a lot of my own money in it. But most of all people involved do it for free. So it's now 2 weeks ago that we shot the clip on the beach of IJmuiden. It was super cold. It was raining. It was windy. And the boys were in the water, and the camera crew was also in the water. And they were just... It was really overwhelming for me that there were 30 people facing all this hardship just because they believe in the project and they think it's really important to do something about this.
So your sadness was shared by other people and that
yes.
it even helped you out.
Absolutely,
yeah.
yes.
Oh, that's nice. The single was released this week.
Yes.
How did the launch party go?
Oh, overwhelmingly positive, of course. Well, at the release party it was. People were very touched by the song and the spirit of us coming together and trying to do something about a cause we care about. So that was a great experience. Obviously, we also get some very emotional negative response on the video clip from people that either want an exit or are against the European Union in general. And I think that is, in a way, is a good sign, because the reason that they are so emotional is because that's what we are trying to touch upon, the emotions in this old drama, instead of usually the number game that comes across so many times. Like, when we talk about Brexit, it's often about the cost of Brexit, the economic backlash it will generate. And of course, that's very important. I care about these things. But it gets boring after a while. And it doesn't sound as urgent and dramatic anymore, even though it still is.
And urgent it is indeed. Now, we've been talking a lot about Brexit politics. And economy as well,
yeah.
But actually not a lot about the cultural loss after the UK will have left. Now, you're an artist. Do you think that we Europeans are going to miss British culture?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of British culture. I love the rom-coms, of course, and I think the story of Brexit is also a little bit like a rom-com. At some point, there is a confusion. Somebody thinks something that isn't correct. Like, they get the wrong information, and because of that, they think the person that they were so in love with doesn't care about them anymore or did something terrible. And then you need to make a gigantic effort to right this wrong and do get back together with this love. And I think we are at that point now, because of course, there are also people that have thought it through very well and have known the consequences and have a reason to be for Brexit. But I do believe that a lot of the people that voted to leave didn't really know what they voted for.
So you're still hoping that this story will have a happy ending?
Absolutely. We need the scene at the end of every rom-com where the main character realizes what they did or what happened, and they start to run towards their love. That's where we are at now.
But in that case, should the UK run towards the EU, or should the Europeans start running now towards the UK?
We should start running to the UK now that we realize. I think we should take their concerns seriously. And that's also what we say in the lyrics. We cannot deny we made mistakes. We had a rocky start. Like, the way that the UK joined the Union, for them was not a proud moment. And that's a bad starting point, of course. And they didn't have a fair choice. They've been misinformed, and the lies let all of us down. I think we let the UK down as well, because when the referendum was happening, we didn't make a good enough effort to show them what it was really about and what the EU really does for its citizens. And we have a PR problem. It's very hard to tell a positive message about the EU somehow.
Have you been contacted by the British media already?
Not yet, no. But it is getting picked up across the globe. So I'm counting on some phone calls today.
Well, this podcast has a lot of British listeners, so maybe some of them can make your song famous.
Oh yeah, in that case, can I ask a question to the audience? We as the Reunion Boys would love to go on tour through the UK and especially through Leave Country or Take That Country, whatever you want to call it. And in the form of a tour passing by pubs, and we will sing our song and we will talk to the public about why we care. And I'm looking for somebody to help me set this up. So if one of your listeners is interested.
Well, your call is being supported by Fog in the Channel. And indeed, listeners to this podcast, you can go to www.reunionboys.net. I will also put the link on my website, foginthechannel.eu. And you can listen to the song Britain Come Back on Spotify or in iTunes. I wish you all the luck with your project. Thank you very much, Julia Feldman, the brain behind the Reunion Boys Band.
Thank you.
But together we're greater. Prison, come back to us. Can we make you change your mind?
What we are asking is for a very large amount of our own money back.
I believe that Britain will be safer, stronger and better off in a reformed European Union.
I'm walking in Notting Hill now, the area that got world famous by the film Notting Hill from 1999, a film at a time that was in a time that everything that came from Great Britain was considered cool. Design, fashion, movies, art. It was the era of Cool Britannia, but that is a long time ago, almost two decades. And at the time, Notting Hill was a very mixed neighborhood with a big community from the former British colonies. And now it is a very, very affluent part of London. Oh, I see a squirrel here. Hello, squirrel. What do you think about Brexit? Squirrel? Squirrel? No, don't run away. Okay, well, that was clearly a squirrel who voted Brexit. In Notting Hill, about two-thirds of the voters voted Remain. So there are not many Brexiteers here. But I was able to find one. His name is Marc Roche. He's a Belgian-born journalist, the former correspondent of the daily Le Monde. He has been living in London since 1985, and before the referendum, he was he was in favour of Remain. But since then, he has changed his mind. He's now a Brexiteer, and I'm meeting him now in his lovely house in Notting Hill, right in front of the Russian embassy. So maybe there has been some Russian meddling in the way he changed his opinion. He published a book in September called Le Brexit va réussir, in French, Brexit will succeed. And I'm going to ask if he still thinks that Brexit is going to succeed. And if yes, why and how?
Monsieur Roche, bonjour. Enchanté. Merci de m'accueillir chez vous.
Pas de problème.
Très sympathique, ce quartier.
Yes, Marc Roche, in the preface of your book you've written, when you learned about the results of the Brexit referendum, I was knocked out. Well, that was 2 years ago, over 2 years ago. What has changed in your perception? What has happened in your brain?
So I was knocked down when I heard the result of the referendum because I was a Remainer, because I'm 67 and I've grown up with the EU institution in Brussels. And I always thought that the EU was the main remedy against a repeat of war between, especially between France and Germany. So I've always been pro-European, although I moved to the UK in 1985. And I knew no Brexiters in my family or my surroundings. I knew no Brexiters among colleagues. And I had never gone really basic to areas where the vote was heavily Brexit, like in the North or the Midlands, because I was a financial journalist. So I, for Le Monde, I traveled all over the world, but I never hardly went to Liverpool, to Middlesbrough, to Sunderland. So since then, I came to realize that what I thought, that Britain had the best of all deals, one foot in, one foot out, never the 2 feet in. In fact, the 52% of the voters didn't want that. And they didn't want that by xenophobic reaction. And I tried to understand this hostility to free circulation, which I always thought was a great thing about the EU, that people could freely travel. And so I came to realize that my view had been completely wrong by the fact that I had this very strong pro-European bias. So when I realized that free circulation in the hardest hit parts of Britain by the politic of austerity, this free circulation was, people were hostile to it for two reasons. One, it put enormous pressure on the wages down, but more than anything, at a time when there were scarce resources for public service, hospital, education, schools, and housing, very tight supply, were completely overwhelmed.
So then you started to travel around Britain?
I started to travel around Britain, and I discovered there was a reality there very different from the one in London. I live in Notting Hill, which is a very cosmopolitan area, quite well-off area. And I went to places where you didn't have that cosmopolitan outlook, that international outlook in the north, and where you had a lot of resentment against the loss of a thing which I never liked really, which was this British nationalism, this belief that Britain was different, that Britain was not completely European, never was, and that many people had family links with the Commonwealth, and they were resentful, partly in ethnic minorities, about the free circulation of Europeans who were mostly white and Christian.
And then you started to understand them.
Then I start to understand their vote. I didn't understand their hostility because I didn't share it. But I did understand the fact that this revolt, this populist revolt, very heavily xenophobic, was really the effect of the financial crisis of 2008, which has been terrible in Britain because the taxpayer had to bail out banks more than anywhere and had lost funds. And the austerity was very strong. So I start to understand the feeling when you need scapegoat, those were the European. But I only start to understand then that free circulation, never crossed my mind before, was definitely a discriminatory system. That a system like the Canadian, where everyone is put on an equal face and where immigration depends on point system, which, by the way, in the UK is for non-EU, would be good to be generalized. So I became less hostile to the concept of and to free circulation.
So even though you yourself have been benefiting from the freedom of circulation?
I benefit in the past of the system. I'm British now because I decide after Brexit. And since I'm going to live the rest of my life in the UK, I better become British. So I'm now Belgian and British. I'm subject to two royalties. I'm very happy to become British because I'll be able to vote and guide the future of this country in a very difficult time post-Brexit. Although I believe that this country will do well outside of the European Union, medium and long term. Yeah.
The title of your book is Brexit is Going to Succeed. We are seeing that British politics is now in quite a mess, to put it mildly. Do you still think that Brexit is going to be a success, even now, after everything we've seen in Westminster?
Absolutely, I think the Brexit will succeed. Short term, I have no idea what will be the deal, and no one has any idea what will happen on 29th of March 2019 when the United Kingdom leaves officially the European Union. But afterwards, I think after a period of difficult adjustment and pressures and economic negative impact, the economy will find its way because it's a very flexible economy. And that medium to long term, but I cannot predict what will be in terms of years, the medium and the long term, but the economy will do well, the United Kingdom will do well, and will even be much more buoyant and dynamic in all its composition than the European Union, who cannot solve its problem.
You're writing in your book that Brexit has caused profound divisions in families, companies, and in the British society as a whole. Do you think that this social fracture is going to be worse, or will it, in the end, heal itself?
I think that British society has always been very divided in class, social, ethnic, regional, income, and everything. It's one of the most divided society in Europe. And the proof being that this acceptance of inequalities, which is always shocking for someone coming like me from quite a meritocratic society like the Belgian one, has made that this is always a class antagonism. It's a profoundly divided. And I can't see, whatever the outcome of Brexit, and I don't know what it will be, how this can be rearranged, because society is deeply divided like never before, and it'll stay divided, because my theory in the book is that the Remainer, who have lost the referendum, whatever outcome will win post-Brexit, in post-Brexit Britain, because they are more adept to adapt to the knowledge economy of tomorrow.
But do you think that in the case of a new referendum, the outcome would be very different?
I don't think there will be a second referendum. For quite obvious reasons, the two main parties have part of the electorate which voted against staying in the European Union. So no one except part of the establishment and former prime minister like Tony Blair or Jean Major and want a referendum. It's limited to the intellectual classes. If there is a second referendum, the result will be more or less the same. Could be Remain by 52%, Leave by 48%, but I don't think so. Why? First, the young people who are the most pro-Remain didn't vote during the referendum and will still not vote. In this country, the young don't vote. We have seen it in Scotland, where they put the age at 16 and the referendum at independence. The young didn't vote and the staying in the UK won very easily. The second reason is I think the Leave vote will not vote for Remain, because Remain said, it'll be an economic catastrophe if you vote for Brexit. Well, 52% have voted for Brexit, and the economy is more or less doing quite well, and unemployment is still zero, and activity is still doing well, and consumers and real estate, the two important part of the growth, are more or less doing well. So why would they vote for Remain then? And part of the Remainer, like me, And if there's a second referendum, I would vote, of course, Remain. But part of the Remain say, well, let's give it a chance.
So a new referendum won't change much. Let's talk about another one. Enough of Brexit. And talk about a far more important election, football. You're Belgium and you're British. Which club would you cheer for during the World Cup? England or the Red Devils?
Of course, I did support the Red Devils. This being said, most of them play in England. But I did support the Red Devils and I couldn't really feel empathy for England. You know, it is at the end of the day, I'm born Belgian. I was raised in Belgium. Belgium has been good to me. They paid my studies. They sent me to study in America. It's a good country. England is more my professional country. And that's why, at the end of the day, like many immigrants, I go for the country in football, which I feel emotionally the closest.
Yeah, I understand. And then the last one, fish and chips or frites belges with a croquette de crevette?
I'll have neither because they are both bad for your silhouette. But I think on the whole, I prefer Belgian food.
Yeah, no, that's not very difficult. Thank you very much, Mark Roche, author of the book Brexit Will Succeed. Well, that's it for this week, the week when there were only 100 days left till Brexit. Let me know what you think about this podcast, about Brexit, or about life in general, on Twitter or on Facebook at Channel Fog. You can also email me on fog@foginthechannel.eu. Please be so kind to share this podcast with your friends or your enemies or your neighbors or whomever, whether they are leavers or remainers. But if you happen to be a leaver, you can leave something else, a review on iTunes. I'm going back now from London to Paris, but there will be more Fog from the isolated continent next week in a new episode, and that will be the last week of the last full year that the United Kingdom has been a member of the European Union. I hope you'll join me then. Thank you for listening. Merry Brexmas and goodbye.
Brexit means Brexit, and we're going to make a success of it.